Thank you for joining us for another episode of Exposing Scientology, where we reveal what really goes on inside this business masquerading as a church. Hi, everyone. We're back. We promised to do part two with Rachel and talk about her experiences in the Sea Org, not so much on the what cover-up there was of sexual predators, but on how Scientology addresses and treats the subject of homosexuality, gays and lesbians, and maybe a few insights into the world of David Miscavige. We're really happy to have you back, Rachel.
Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you.
Yes, we really appreciate you taking the time and having the courage to speak out and let the world know what really goes on. Because one of the things that Leah and I have talked about a lot, Rachel, with respect to Scientology, is the hypocrisy of them saying on one hand that they are completely not against homosexuality and that they are equal opportunity employers and they are accepting of everyone. And the real truth is that their actual beliefs are 180 degrees opposite of that. That is not what Scientologists are taught about gay people.
What Mike is saying, that Scientology and Scientologists, civilian Scientologists, celebrity Scientologists, and the Scientology itself as an organization repeatedly lies about their true beliefs. And we were all Scientologists most of our lives, both on our OT, done our OT levels, you know, our upper confidential levels. So we could attest to the fact of being raised in Scientology and you guys at the Sea Org, as well as me as a celebrity Scientologist and civilian Scientologist, we have to read, are forced to read and buy the same books. The basic books are Dianetics and Science of Survival. Every Scientologist reads, it's forced. It's not by choice. There's a certain structure of how to learn Scientology and how you get your Scientology auditing, which is what the bridge is. And it's done in steps and everybody has to do these steps. So when people like Laura Prepon or whatever bullshit Scientologist is promoting Scientology says, you know, I never read that.
I've been a Scientologist since 1999 and I've never come across any piece of information that remotely is negative or derogatory in any way towards the LGBT community.
You know, my question as a journalist would be, well, are you a Scientologist even? Because if you haven't read Dianetics and Science of Survival, which are the basic books of Scientology, mandatory reading, then I don't know. I'm talking to the wrong person about this because you're not clearly not a Scientologist.
It's not hard to find. It's not hidden.
It's not hidden, but it's written in its own nomenclature. And I think part of the problem is, you know, with judges and lawyers and journalists, you know, they don't want to admit that they don't know something. And so they don't, you know, pick up the phone and call people and say, what the fuck does this mean? You know what I mean? So they just kind of let it, they just write the story, you know, blah, blah, said there's no such thing, you know, and it's lazy. I don't even know if you can call it journalism anymore when anybody's reporting on Scientology, but of the few handful that are actually reporting on the beliefs of Scientology. But where Rachel's concerned, and, you know, we've had other stories of people who have told us the same story because it's true. Scientology, when you were in the Sea Org, went so far as to force you to marry a man.
Yeah.
I mean, Rachel, tell us your story. I mean, tell us what you admitted that you were gay, which is a hard thing to admit in Scientology because, as you know, the policies and what L. Ron Hubbard teaches and what all Scientologists think.
Basics information that is massively pushed. And in the last few years since the re-release of these basic books, it's pushed that it's a absolute requirement. Like, you cannot say I am a Scientologist and not have read Dianetics. You can't even be a hired professional who says I'm not a Scientologist, I just work here, and you won't read Dianetics. Like,
right.
Like, it's just absolutely basic, the basics, yeah. Dianetics, yeah. Science of Survival, yeah. Where a lot of these things are coming from. It's not yeah. high level confidential scripture.
Correct.
Right. And I'm only yeah. going to use some quotes from these basic books.
Yeah.
These are the books that are on my bookshelf behind me that you can buy today at any Scientology organization or online at Amazon, if you wish. This is not old stuff. This is current Scientology doctrine.
Correct. Okay. So okay, let's
so here we go.
Yeah.
This is from Dianetics, the Modern Science of Mental Health. What Scientologists call and what L. Ron Hubbard called the book one of mm-hmm. Dianetics and Scientology. Mm-hmm. It is still considered to be the first book that everybody should be reading when they come into Scientology. And it says the sexual pervert, and by this term, Dianetics, to be brief, includes any and all forms mm-hmm. of deviation in dynamic two, which is family and sex, such as homosexuality, lesbianism, sexual sadism, etc., and all down the catalog of Ellison, Krauff, Ebing, is actually quite ill physically. This is fundamental Scientology belief.
Basic. That
sexual perversion includes homosexuality and lesbianism. There is, in the next book that Hubbard wrote called Science of Survival, that both Rachel and Leah just referenced, a chart called the Chart of Human Evaluation, and it is the thing around which the book is written and constructed. Mm-hmm. This chart, I'm going to just give you one little brief bit of it, and it is 1.1, and the 1.1 refers to levels of survival that Hubbard laid out from actually below zero, but let's just say zero up to 40. And he put up this chart with all of the characteristics of people at each one of these levels. And at 1.1, which is very, very low, it's down near zero, and at 1.1, he says promiscuity, perversion, sadism, irregular practices. So this is where the idea that homosexuality is 1.1 on the tone scale comes from.
It's and mentioned- by the way, Mike, use of children for sadistic purposes.
Right.
So if I could just add something to this, on this scale, we're all taught this is how we should get married. This is how we should maintain friendships. This is how we disregard people in our lives by charting them on this tone scale. And anything below 2.0 is hell-bent on death and destruction. And anything above 2.0 in the scale is okay, which is why abuse is okay and accepted in Scientology, because it's considered antagonism, right? Anger and the band of, you know, like, so beating people is 2.0 and it's okay, right? Like,
right.
It's that attitude is okay. So why 1.1 is so important here to describe how horrible Scientologists really think is that the 1.1 is categorized in Science or Survival as the most dangerous tone to ever be connected to in your life. A 1.1 will smile at you while they're stabbing you in your back. It is the word, the 1.1s, L. Ron Hubbard says, should be taken off to their own island and basically die.
Right.
And we would be better off in mankind if all the 1.1s were taken off the face of the earth.
Well, actually, I'm going to give you the quote from Science of Survival right here.
Wow.
There are only two answers for the handling of people from 2.0 down on the tone scale. And realize, Leah's talking about 1.1. There is chapters about 1.1. Mm-hmm. And what Leah just said is absolutely accurate. 1.1, he claims, is the worst level to be on.
Yep.
But this just gives this big picture.
Yeah.
So he says there's only two answers. The first is to raise them on the tone scale by uninterpolating some of their theta by any one of three valid processes. All that means in English is do Scientology auditing. Scientology auditing will solve this problem of the person low on the tone scale.
Correct.
The other is to dispose of them quietly and without sorrow. Adders are safe bedmates compared to people on the lower bands of the tone scale. And Rachel, you made reference to that in our last one, talking about, you know, having an adder in your bed is a better state of affairs than a gay person.
Mm-hmm.
The sudden and abrupt deletion of all individuals occupying the lower bands of the tone scale from the social order would result in an almost instant rise in the cultural tone and would interrupt the dwindling spiral into which any society may have entered. That's just what Leah said. This goes on to say there was a Venezuelan dictator who solved the problem of leprosy by rounding up all the lepers or beggars or something and dumping them on an island isolated from the rest of society where they could just die off and everybody else went along just wonderfully. And I also note that this is a reflection of the ideas that Scientologists have about underprivileged handicapped people, people with afflictions, that you're just better off getting rid of them. They're a menace to society. We need to get on with the job at hand. Then this third reference is from another book called Handbook for Preclears, which comes after Science of Survival. And it's a little, the first part of this is a little deep into the Scientology wah-wah jargon, but it talks about homosexuality and his theories about where it comes from, and that in the highlighted part, break this life continuum concept.
Mm-hmm.
This is just an idea that he has that you assume the life of or the
personality.
Yeah. Personality of people who, particularly your parents, and run off the desires to be in effect and their failures, and the homosexual is rehabilitated. Homosexuality is about 1-1 on the tone scale, so is general promiscuity. This is where the idea comes from in Scientology that you can audit the gay away.
Right.
That by engaging
conversion therapy.
It is exactly by engaging in Scientology practices, both auditing, sec checking. There's a whole bunch of sec checks that have questions about have you ever engaged in homosexuality, including
the Joburg. Yeah,
right.
That is, have you engaged in homosexuality? And there's one, have you ever like helped two women to have sex? It's like there's like three or four questions. If it's totally fine and there's no problem, which is what I was told, it's totally fine for you to be gay and we don't have a problem with it, and everybody who's saying that there's discrimination or that there's a problem with it is lying, then why is it a security check question? Security check questions are looking for things that you did wrong.
Right
Exactly.
Which they need to fix in you.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because you're not allowed to.
These interrogations are mandatory for all Scientologists, including 6-year-olds.
They're mandatory actions. And I would say the most common action that occurs currently for most people, certainly the most common action that occurs with staff members of any form.
And the other question that we're asked a lot, Mike, is like, why are celebrity Scientologists allowed to do, again, like Laura Prepon or Elizabeth Moss, you know, like most Scientology celebrities and people who are spokesperson for Scientology, we all are taught to lie because we've covered this in the last episode with Rachel. It's the Shore story. It's tell an acceptable truth. right? So, you know, we're not allowed to say what Scientology really believes because people can't handle it, right? So, you know, people like Laura Prepon who can play a lesbian because she's just playing one on TV and she doesn't have to agree with what she's doing. And Scientology allows her to do it because it makes her money and it gives her a platform to sell Scientology. So it's not that she's in agreement with it. She's just able to get paid and give Scientology a platform. That's why Scientologists are allowed to do these types of movies and TV shows, simply because it helps to give Scientology celebrity a platform to sell Scientology. Whether right. they but do I, it but, publicly but I will, or privately, yeah. they're selling Scientology on off the set. Even if they're not talking about Scientology, they're working every day to show everybody on the crew, their co-stars, that they're perfect people, that they're there just to help. They're good friends to these people. They never sold me on Scientology. Them not selling you on Scientology is them selling you on Scientology.
100%. And it pushes the lie forward, right? Because yeah. the truth of the matter is there are a handful of public.
Yeah.
And I've even heard of one staff member at Portland Org. I don't remember his name, who are LGBTQ.
Yeah.
I've never heard of anyone trans. But I have heard of lesbian or gay or bi, yeah. right. As a public uh-huh. and you can join and you can buy Scientology auditing, which is their processing, whatever with the yeah. different forms.
Sure.
They'll take your money and they will not say, turn you away at this point of things. They will not, you know, you walk into the church in LA, they're not going to turn you away. They'll take your money.
Celebrity center, they're going to be like, we welcome everybody.
But yes. you will be programmed
yes.
to audit the gay away. They're talking about you behind
that, Rachel. Yeah.
Those Sea Org members and those staff members are talking about you behind the back. They're making sure they don't trust you because I have seen this happen thousands yeah. of times.
Rachel.
You are not to be trusted. They're talking about you behind their back and they're figuring out how to program you. They're going, we got to watch out for this one.
Yep.
You know, this one's dangerous. We can't trust them because they have been taught that we are dangerous and scary yeah. and they're going to treat your entire existence that way and smile to your face. And it's extremely disingenuous and dangerous. And then if you're out there playing a lesbian, but you're a Scientologist or you're promoting that this abuse towards lesbians on The Handmaid's Tale, which is one of the, has elements to it that are one of the most accurate portrayals of the Sea Org, if we left it unchecked, in my opinion, it is triggering to watch that show.
Of course,
that Gilead is the future that this church Gilead, is going for.
It is Scientology. I mean, it is Scientology now.
It, imagine unchecked, and they all had guns, and they could execute you, right? Oh, yeah. For being, you know, the one thing I realized from being on the inside was I saw things change, and I was aware of the attackers. I was aware yeah. of what Mike was doing because I wasn't aware of it like the level OSA is, but I was aware yeah. that this stuff existed because I was out running around the world filming and I yeah. saw newspaper articles in the grocery store. I saw magazine articles. I saw Leah's book on display in an airport. I saw different things. And occasionally I would be asked to go film an interview or, you know, like film going clear, like things like occasionally, right? So I was more aware than most people are. But one of the things I observed was when Mike started speaking out and certain people started speaking out, things changed internally because there was outside pressure. And I realized things were not changing because of people from the inside writing reports asking for change. They were changing because of outside pressure, but it's right. not a genuine change. The second that pressure goes away, that fear yeah. of the public relations backlash, the sure. second that goes away and they're not being held accountable, it will quickly escalate into Gilead.
Completely. Yes.
Yep.
That's why we do this. That's why it's important because, I mean, you know, I was sitting there being told Leah only does this for money. She does this for her career, you know, because blah, blah, blah. you know, no one's going to hire her now, but all this misogynistic anti-woman bullshit, which is all a lie. She, yeah. You know, they're doing this for money. I'm not doing this for money. Y'all aren't giving me any money. It would be a lot easier for me to just go live my life and do stuff. But if I don't say there are people still stuck within it. There's people with family members still stuck within it. And there are people in other organizations that are cult-like who are stuck and trapped and feel alone. Yeah. And if we don't present ourselves and say something about it and call it out and say, hey, you're not alone. Hey, you are valid. You know, hey, it's going to be okay. If you can walk away, walk away. We're here for you. It's going to be okay. Then things will spiral into Gilead. That's what I think.
Yes. And it's not just about, you know, Scientologists, right? Because there are real religions in the world and families that, you know, are putting their children through this, shunning their own. And, you know, the message overall is to all of them, right? And to Scientology victims of this is there is nothing wrong with you. In Scientology terms, they say you're aberrated, right? It's off of a straight line. It's relationship is between a man and a woman. And if you're having these feelings, right, the Catholic Church will say, you know, we love you. You know, we accept you. God accepts you. It's not a sin unless you act on it, right? It's like, yeah. Okay.
Which doesn't work. I tried it.
Of course.
It doesn't work.
it's just asking people to not be themselves. So it's the way you were born. Again, you're perfect just the way you are. And it's like this message that Scientology sends that there's something wrong with you. We have the technology in this conversion therapy, which, you know, by the way, doesn't even work. So it's not even worth it. Just what it's doing, right, to these children, it's what it's doing to them is what you're saying, Rachel, why we're all talking about this today. Right. Anyway, I just wanted to say that, Rachel, it's because I just want to hit, I feel such a passion about saying that, because whether you were saying you were gay or, you know, we're Shelley Miscavige and why are we beating people and why are we putting people's confessions on a website, you know, you're wrong. There's something wrong with you for asking these questions. There's something wrong with you that you want to be connected to your mother, your grandchildren. There's something wrong with you if you're not giving us all your money, all of your time. You know, there's nothing right with you in Scientology. Mm-hmm. You're always wrong. There's always something wrong with you that you need to pay to fix. Either you're paying with money or your time, or you're paying with your life when you're Sea Org members and giving up your whole life for something that is a scam and harmful.
Rachel was, as you know, was a camera woman and a very good one.
And a picked one. She was the chosen one of David Miscavige.
Ended up being that because of her skill. Yeah. And there were events that got done, you know, Miscavige used to do them before COVID 6 times a year and now exclusively does them on the little stage at the Flag Land Base when he does them because he's afraid to go out in public anywhere else.
Why?
But
why is he scared to go out in public?
He doesn't want to be served by your process service.
Well, not just mine.
And everybody else's. Yeah. And he doesn't want the media asking him questions. He doesn't want to be in public. He is effectively a hermit within the walls of Scientology now.
Right.
Back in the day when Rachel was there, she was a Sea Org member. And, you know, the world of a Sea Org member is a lot different in many respects than the world of a Scientology parishioner or public person. Mm-hmm. You see the essence of Scientology in the Sea Org.
Mm-hmm.
You see the less varnished public relations version of Scientology in the Sea Org. Mm-hmm. It is a closed environment, so you know nobody is worried too much about what how they act or what they say different than if they're out in the public realm where someone may have a camera and be recording them, you know, beating someone or cursing them out in the most foul language that you can imagine, or calling them homosexual slurs, or, you know, covering up abuse, whatever. All of that stuff within the Sea Org is sort of concentrated and less pretense.
Yeah.
There's less pretense in the Sea Org.
Agreed,
when you have a particular status, no matter what your job is, if you work directly with David Miscavige, and if he recognizes you and knows who you are, you're in a very, very elite category of people in the Sea Org.
You are in the firing line.
You are absolutely in the firing line.
It's both. It's always both. That's the technique. It's the build you up,
as
love
Mike
bombing
knows
shoot.
Very well. Yes.
Is
my
very well. Yes. In
but
any event,
Rachel was one of those people. Yeah.
Yes, she was. Yeah. David Miscavige knew who she was, liked her, wanted her shooting him with her video camera when he was doing events. Yeah. And from that, Rachel, please tell us what happened.
Yeah. So I was around Scientology because I ran into celebrities. And that's how I ended up in Los Angeles as, you know, working for a director. So my first encounter was Beverly Hills Playhouse. I don't know if you remember that, Leah.
Yes.
Because I was acting. I didn't know what exactly I wanted to do in the industry, but I was acting. So I was taking acting classes.
I didn't know that with Milton.
Yeah, I was with Alan. Jocelyn Jones.
So was I. So,
yeah. So
wait, were you in class? Were we ever in class together?
I don't think so. Okay, I don't know.
Yeah, no. I mean, we would know if we had.
It would be early 2000s. I would have remembered you.
Yeah. Well, thank you. okay. So yes, Jocelyn, the amazing Jocelyn Jones. Have you? Okay, we'll talk later.
It
about
would end yeah. every class like this. And but she was a Scientologist at this time. And so I ran in. I was around running around. I didn't understand. I grew up in Christianity, and it wasn't a very pro gay environment. So I already was like, well, I'm sure that's not me. I just am a tomboy, right? That's what people would say. You're just a tomboy, right? Okay. So I didn't have an understanding of why. I had no interest physically in boys. And my friends were like, I'll date that guy if you're not going to, you know, do anything. And I just had zero interest. I was like, what is wrong with me? I don't get it. And this is why I say representation matters. Yeah. This is why I try to work as much as I can on LGBTQ film projects, because it just was not around me. I was like in Michigan, and then I was at film school in Nashville, and it was just not around. Then I get to LA, it was a little bit more around. So I ended up at parties. There was a lot of like a push at that time for girls to kiss girls at parties because guys thought it was cool. But it was definitely within the film industry, especially if you were acting or whatever. There were many girls I ended up having some stuff happen with, but it was like, oh, no. I'm not gay. Or even if they were, they weren't going to make it. Like there's people that were around who were like not going to come out as lesbians because it would have hurt their career acting wise. And they went on to do things. And that didn't necessarily have anything to do with Scientology, but Scientology was very present within actors and stuff. So you'd go to a party and one person would be a Scientology actor or something like that. So I was kind of in that scene, which was very glitzy and very glamorous. Then I end up being offered the ability to go run around the world shooting. And they're like, we'll give you a camera. We'll give you a crew. We're going to send you to Israel on your first job. And then you're going to go to Madrid. And then you're going to be, you know, in France, all over France. And I was like, yeah. But they said, you have to do this. You know, now you have to do the interrogation because to work for Golden Era Productions, you have to be int cleared, they call it, which means
you're so funny because I wonder what the criteria is, Mike.
Well,
there's a lot.
Yeah. No, no. But what I'm saying is, you know, you had people beating the shit out of each other. You had all kinds of abuses going on, physical, sexual, mental. But you know, here's what you can't be: a lesbian.
I was definitely told you cannot be gay, and I was given an. What they did was they brought me and sent me out filming stuff. So yeah. I was already into it. I had really cool crew. I was working with it. It was fun. It was exciting. And I was being empowered. There was a lot that was great about it.
Sure.
And I was seeing all this cool stuff and mostly working with cool people. And you know, who just wanted to like do good things and, you know, do docs that change the world and, you know, things like that. Right. So I'm like, this is cool. And then they go, okay, but now we have to do your clearances in your first year to make sure you have clearance. It's like getting a security clearance in the military is how they try to treat it. So you need to get this international level clearance, which is one of the highest you could get. Religious Technology Center would be higher, but nothing else is higher. Right. You're going to be approved to go to Golden Era Productions. And so they said, you know, this lady takes me aside and goes, look, you were at Beverly Hills Playhouse. If you even did a scene where you were with a girl or you were a lesbian, you are not qualified and you're losing your job. And I had sold everything I had. Like, you know, I had committed.
You signed a billion-year contract, gave up your whole life for this.
And I was so green. They give me this billion-year contract and I go, what? Is this? Like, I'd been around barely at all.
Laura and they go, it's do symbolic. A whole series. Laura Prepon could do a whole series. That's okay. But you can't but go ahead. Yeah, this is the hypocrisy at all levels, right?
You were at Beverly Hills Playhouse and we've had to, we have stopped female actresses. There's a micro clearances you go through to be an actor in a Golden Era Productions film to go to gold if you're a Scientologist. Mm-hmm. So they said, we've stopped girls who were like, I'm not gay. I just did a scene as a gay person. And no, they're not cleared. You cannot be in this technical training film, right? Like they said, so you don't have anything, right? Because we're going to quit everything. And I was like, oh, no, right? And there's this like denial and internalized homophobia and all this stuff. I had also run into celebrity Scientologists saying extremely anti-gay things to me. You know, it was just around. And I was like dazzled by them and looked up to them. These are people with like success and whatever. And I was like, whoa, they know so much more than me. I'm so young. And so I kind of went away with that and like buried that stuff because I kept telling myself it couldn't be possibly true that I'm a lesbian. And I didn't know there weren't any lesbians around either. I thought all lesbians like were like dykes on bikes, like leather and, you know, short hair and just butch. And I'm just a bit of a tomboy. I'm not like driving a motorcycle and wearing a leather vest. So I must not be a lesbian, right? It's such a bad word. And I'm reading all this indoctrination stuff on it. So I buried it and was like, no, that must not be me. They approved me for Golden Era Productions. I went up there and then left and then went up there and left. And they never ended up actually, there was a group of us that were int cleared, which they built new housing for at Golden Era, and we were supposed to go up there. A lot of times the crew would come down, I would work with them, mostly super cool people that, you know, so I was like, these are cool people, this is where I'm gonna go. I was able to go up there and see the place and tour the place. I only saw the really great places, and the food was pretty decent, you know. And they're like, just go travel around the world, but by the way, because you are int cleared, until you are posted by COB, chairman of the board, David Miscavige, until you and your group of people are posted, you are not allowed to have anything on your second dynamic, which is family and sex, right? You cannot flirt with a person. You cannot start a relationship. You cannot apply to try to get married. It's nothing, zero, nothing. Mm-hmm. No watching freaky videos, like nothing. And you could lose your position and your job. Now I have really close friends I'm traveling the world with, and we're doing cool things, and I was lucky and unlucky because it made me stay around for longer and it made me not see what was really going on for longer. But we were in this exciting position where it would be like, get on the next plane to Kathmandu. You're not allowed to have anything on the psychodynamic. And with a background of having experienced SA, I was like, and feeling like I just had no attraction to men at all, which I still didn't understand. I was like, oh, okay. I'll go years with nothing and doing nothing. And I did nothing. Believe me, I was interrogated every time I came back into town. I did nothing for years. So then I'm like, well, what am I? Am I ace? Am I asexual? Am I like, what's the deal? Not having the words or the language and being cut off from queer culture and stuff, and very disconnected from that. I just didn't have the words to explain or to understand what was going on. Then I was like, well, this sucks. I'm lonely, you know, whatever. David Miscavige comes and sees me at St. Hill when you're, which is the church in England where we're doing the International Association of Scientologists show live event. And he said, I bought this TV studio. We're going to move you guys to this TV studio. And I was one of the first people right after that. I was one of the first people to go into what was KCET Public Access, which we had purchased. It was still operating as KCET. And I filmed it for him and stuff like that. So I was like, okay, well, I probably should be able to have some sort of relationship. I'm really lonely. So I went to the ethics people that you talk to and our deputy manager, you know, we're re-clearing you. So I got re-cleared, re-approved. And I went and I said, hey, I'm like lonely. I would love to be able to have some sort of relationship. It's been like 7 or 8 years. It would be cool to have something, right? And they're like, oh, okay, yeah, let's work something out. And then they come to me and this one chick says, I know who you're gonna marry. We have who it is. And it was a person, a guy from another country. So it was convenient that, you know, if things didn't work out with an R1 visa, I could help with the visa. Mm-hmm. And he was very liked by David Miscavige. Mm-hmm. He was a big performer in Cirque du Soleil shows and was very nice and kind. And then they came in hard and the manager was like, great. So they like kind of set us up. We spoke for a few weeks and then they're mm-hmm. like, but look, we can't have you risking getting pregnant. And also this, there's an opening right now of like a few weeks where we think we're going to be able to be allowed to have people get married. And that might close again. We don't know what's going to happen. So you got to go. And we're approving that it happens, that it occurs, but you got to get married right away. Cause we have to preserve you. You're now shooting at this point. I'm shooting for David Miscavige and I'm a person of interest, whatever. So we gotta, you know, be all up in your business. It's not this intense for all people, but it is if you're working for him in any capacity. Right. Mm-hmm. So they were like, it needs to be someone he's going to be okay with that he knows.
So you're forced to marry this guy. You marry this guy that you hardly know.
I was also forced to get an IUD.
Forced to get an IUD.
Which was a horrible, horrible experience.
I'm sure.
Work and I didn't want to do and I wasn't in agreement with. And if they just let me practice lesbianism, you wouldn't be worried about me getting pregnant.
Right.
Just want to say it can be an effective form of birth control.
You can make it easier.
Hard to get
you can make it easier
pregnant.
On yourselves.
That's a great line.
You probably won't have as many divorces. Like, yeah, there's many upsides to this, people. So you're forced to get an IUD. You're forced to marry this man. You're forced to live with this man. Thank God, Sea Org relationships really don't exist in, like they do in the real world. You guys don't have to pay each other's bills. You're not responsible for anything really having to do with each other. It's just a kind of convenience for the Sea Org, right? I mean, and for people who do want to have sex with each other eventually, not that you ever see each other, but, and sex is kind of like not really a thing either in the Sea Org.
Yeah. I mean, it's not considered important, but in a way it's very strange, right? It's sort of hard to explain, right?
Yes, because so, it's like they force this relationship, but it's not a relationship. And then if you say like you want to have sex, you know, with your partner, it's like you have work to do. It's like so crazy, like it's so like not necessary that you connect physically with your partner. in the Sea Org, or even.
But then, on the other hand, the interrogations are almost exclusively about what did you do sexually.
Oh yes, sure. Absolutely. They want to know every detail.
Every little detail.
Oh my God! I mean, we've had many conversations about that, right? Like, it's like if you're, you know, at a person who likes a little bit of like talk. You know, it's like, why are you doing that? That's aberrated and weird.
Right.
You know,
yeah, like legal yeah. porn. Yeah. It's legal. It's a thing. And I'd have guys like juniors coming to me and they'd be getting in trouble. And I was kind of like, I mean, they're sticking these young guys and telling them for 7 years they're not allowed to do anything.
Yes.
Sexual. Yes. And then you're gonna expect them not to go do something with themselves, like a 23-year-old dude. Like, I just think that's a little unrealistic. So I always felt for these guys, and I think I had a couple guys tell me stuff when we were out on the road, like, "Hey, I may have done this thing, or I may have seen this thing," and I think I chose not to turn them in because I was just like, "This is stupid."
That's the other thing. I mean,
you're doing your job. You're kicking ass. Like,
right, exactly. And if I want to, like, you know, real quick, knock one out, like, on myself, like, it's very productive. But anyway, you're forced to marry a man, forced to get an IUD. How long are you married to this imposter in your life?
So it didn't take me very long to realize I absolutely do not want to do anything physical with men, right? And there's this line that all, like, lesbians are man haters. I don't hate men. I love hanging out with guys. I have friends that are guys. I don't hate men. I just don't want to sleep with them. I figured that out. We went through a lot of really busy, intense things. A lot of the time we were not living together and we were not physically together for big chunks of it. I was out on the road somewhere filming, or I just avoided it every way I could. All these things that totally suck for hetero couples that are actually happy with each other. And you know Mark and Claire, and they like wanted to be together, you know, all this stuff that's horrible for them. I was like, you don't have any room to give us rooms together and I have to go live with a bunch of girls. Okay, I understand. It's cool. Oh, I have to go out on the road. Okay, cool.
You have to have sex with somebody that you don't love, that you're not in a relationship with, that you're forced to marry, and now forced into a sexual relationship with a man, and you don't like men. I mean, there's nothing right about this, Rachel.
And I wouldn't wish it on anyone.
Understood.
And it happens, and it shouldn't be. It shouldn't. And
I'm assuming this was your first sexual experience, or
it wasn't. I'd had other sexual experiences.
With a man.
A couple other sexual experiences with a man when I was younger, and but it was, I was still trying to like figure things out, and I never really liked it. So understood. I was like, I was trying to process.
You're like, what am I? I must be doing something wrong. I'm missing something, right?
I really just thought there was something wrong with me. It was the only logical explanation. Is there's something wrong with me? So then I went in and was like, I don't like this. I'm not comfortable with this. So you're supposed to go talk to ethics. So I spoke to ethics people, the ethics section, because they're supposed to help you with processing whatever.
Yeah.
I was given. There's references that even say that if you don't want sex and you're in a relationship, it means you're low on the tone scale.
Right.
This is all tone scale stuff, right? And if you're low on the tone scale, you're not qualified for your job. You lose your job and you lose your work. And I lived for that. I loved it. And I felt I was like meeting cool people and doing good things that I wanted to be helpful and, you know, help others. So I didn't want to be that person. I was like, well, I better figure out how to, now I need to, I did this ethics handling and I was like, I need to figure out how to make myself. They're like, you're going to have to figure this out. Like in ethics, like, I don't want to have sex with a guy, right? Like, well, here's all the stuff on it. You better go figure it out. And then I ended up in a situation that I consider being raped. So then I went back and I said, I feel like I'm being raped. Then all this family stuff blew up and all this other stuff blew up. And it just, those are other stories that could be their own other episodes. You know, we can't get into everything, but then we ended up separated for a few years, not living together, but still legally married. And I was going in saying, okay, I feel gay. Okay, cool. So just do this processing, just do this program. And okay, now go out and film some more stuff because we actually have a crisis and we need you. Now come back, do this more stuff. I'm like, well, I just did that processing or that course or like whatever you wanted me to do. I feel more gay.
Right.
And it was literally making me, I felt more gay. I was like, I am more sure. You know, right. At a certain point, I was like, I don't know what it is. Something's wrong with me. I just don't want this. Can you help me figure this out? Because you're supposed to be there to help me figure this out, right?
Right.
And then in the end, I was just like, I'm totally gay. Like, I'm not bi. There's nothing wrong with being bi, but I am not bi.
Right.
I am a lesbian. Yeah. How do you want to go about handling this? Because this is the deal, right? I like filming. I like most of the people I work with. I know I'm relied on for a bunch of stuff, but what do you want to do? Because I can't not be gay. And they're like, well, we're just going to, don't tell him. Don't tell him. So that went on for some ridiculous period of time where we were not living together, but he thinks everything's fine. And we're going to handle him over here. And I was literally taken by a ethics person who is the butchest chick I have ever seen in the Sea Org. And she said, oh, we need to talk about this. I don't want to talk about, let's not talk about this in public. Step into the closet with me. So she would pull me into the closet at that building on Hollywood Boulevard to talk to me about not telling anyone that I'm gay. And then to lecture me about how I got married for the wrong reason and how dare I do this to this poor guy. And I was like, well, okay, can I come out of the closet now? Like, I was like, at this point, I was kind of done with it. So I was like making jokes and she didn't get it. I was like, you want to come out of the closet with me?
Right, right, right.
Super butch chick that just happens to have never gotten married. I don't know how you doing.
Right, right.
You know, it was like, so the irony was just.
Yeah, complete.
And I'm like pointing it out and they're just like not getting it. So, I just kept saying, I'm gay. I'm super gay. I'm super gay. I'm super gay. Don't tell him. Don't tell him. Then someone else comes in and goes, look, you got to tell him. It's so fucked up that you didn't tell him. And I was like, well, which am I? What am I supposed to do? I said, well, I don't know. I just want resolution. I don't want people to be upset. I need to be me. And they're like, eventually the HAS, which is the HCO area secretary, which is this complicated name for just a high level executive from Scientology Media Productions, pulled me aside, had me step into a closet and said, look, I want to talk to you. You want to handle your gay problem, right? So you want to handle your gay problem, right? She was like, you want to handle your problem, right? And I was like, what problem? She's like, you know, you want to handle your gay problem. And I was like, well, what do you mean? What are you saying here? You know, because at this point I like very much was like, this is not a problem. I'm just going to embrace this. This is me. So whatever. Right. And I was telling people, I was saying, hey y'all, if I tell people about this, it's like wearing the scarlet letter. I was saying, this is how gay people are treated, whatever, whatever. Right. I was previous to this put into procedures where I was like, they decided that because I was assaulted when I was 12 at, you know, Christian Science summer camp, that must be it. So they were going to give me an interrogation security check by a student auditor. So I was in a course room with other people and they're asking me what I did. What was my overt, which is some sin that you committed, something you did wrong. What was my overt when I was 12 years old and I had gotten injured and had a concussion and was bleeding. And instead of being taken to the hospital because they're Christian Scientists and they don't do that, I was sexually molested by a 30 something year old counselor that was taking us on a trip to camp in Colorado. Mm-hmm. Like, how was that my fault? I'm in there arguing, going, you know what? I was a kid. I was like literally had a head injury. I do not think that anything there was my fault. I wasn't even like, you can't even be like, she was dressing like a little.
No, I was 11 or 12. You can't even pull that bullshit.
Like, there's nothing like
one. So they were trying to use this incident where you were hurt as well as had a crime committed against you as the reasoning for your.
For me being gay. Yeah. Okay. And for me saying, I feel like I've been raped.
Right.
I am being raped.
Right. So they were like, you're playing the victim and once we handle this victim inclination that you have, you'll clear up this gayness that you have.
Yes.
And okay, then they so that didn't work. Closet. Clearly, Rachel.
Yeah, so then
why are we always in a closet?
Irony of my life.
Crazy. All right, go ahead.
It's like, yeah, you couldn't write this shit, right? Yeah. Truth is stranger than fiction. Yeah, so, yeah. So then all that's going on, and then they're giving me all this like word clearing, they call it, where you have to like read the passages, all of the ones Mike read, plus a whole bunch of other ones about being a deviant and a pervert and a child molester and everything on that, and how I'm mistaking sex with pain. And I'm like, well, you know, I got to tell you, if someone's forcing it on you, it is painful, but I don't like it.
Right.
So, you know, because I've got this reference called Pain and Sex, and they're making me read all this stuff out loud in front of other people who hate gay people and make gay jokes.
Right.
Making me read this stuff out loud so everybody knows I'm going through a handling for being super gay or being some sadistic something, some perversion. So then the Haz comes over and goes, look, you know, your folder, you haven't been, you know, handled correctly, and your folder is programmed, which means a case supervisor has come in and has like laid out this program for you to handle your gay problem. And you've got an auditor dedicated to it, and they're taking you in session tomorrow. So I was like, and then she goes, don't surfac. So what that means is like, don't use a service facsimile. So they say a facsimile is like a picture of something bad that happened to you in the past. Mm-hmm. And now you're putting it into service to make other people wrong instead of just being responsible for it. Right. So she's like, don't surfac. Just, you know, just do this because I've done a lot of work on this program for you. And I'm like, yes, sir. Okay. Sounds jolly good. And they threw me in one session and it was a clusterfuck. And then I was like, God, I just can't miss this medical appointment. They're like, well, we have to send someone with you because it's Gilead and The Handmaid's Tale, and they got to make sure somebody's with me. You can't go anywhere alone. And I go, well, I was, you know, thrown a fit on a bunch of stuff. So I'm like, well, you're violating HIPAA. So I don't want someone to go with me. Right. And, you know, I might be talking about, you know, like my vagina or something. So I don't want someone in the room with me because that could be inappropriate. And, you know, really, this is the address of where I'm going. It's real easy, blah, blah, blah. Let's not even get into all the medical shit that led up to the fact that I could get an appointment because I went out and violated the rules and got myself Medicare.
Yeah.
Medicaid or whatever, like your low income, which you're not allowed to do as a CIRC member because they don't want anyone to know that they're not actually providing medical care. They made me lie on a survey. A guy from OSA came in and I'd gotten a statewide survey, and he filled it out for me with me there and made me sign it and lie that I have insurance. I was like, well, I don't have insurance. I'm not getting the medical care that I need. So I had gone out and gotten Medicare and I was like throwing a fit. And so I used the fact that because I had blown stuff up like this, I couldn't be at Scientology Media Productions, and they were trying to figure out what to do with me. And they were supposed to be reporting to David Miscavige on the handlings on me. I would imagine they probably weren't eager to tell him that I'm like, I'm gay.
Right.
They had sent this like raging dyke around to film and photograph him for so many years, because that would be like, they could get in trouble. I don't know, whatever. So I used the fact that I was like doing things at three different echelons and levels, because I would go out and shoot stuff. And I was like saying, oh, I have to be able to handle this. And oh, I have to be able to handle that to get some freedom. So I actually contacted my sister, who is not a Scientologist, and she helped me set up a car. Buy a car and get in a room in a house that, you know, and like, they thought I was still in and participating. And my sister told me like, don't set him off. She's like, she had watched your show, Leah and Mike. So she had this whole thing. Here's what you're going to do. You're going to go back, act like everything's fine.
Smart.
Just play along. She was like, she had this whole plan. She had money saved from when my mother had died.
Wow.
For this moment. She goes, I have money for you. And I said, and by the way, I'm super gay. She's like, cool.
But I do have a problem with you being in Scientology, Rachel.
Yeah. And she's like, I have money for you saved. Yeah. Your brother and I have watched all of Leah and Mike's episodes. Wow. We know what to do. We're God here for them. You.
Wow. So, God bless them. Really? Yeah. Wow.
But it's the power of the show that you don't know these things happen, right? They had prepared. And my mom, when she died on her deathbed, was like, please take care of Rachel. We have to get her out.
Oh.
And my sister was like, I promise mom I would do this. Wow. And we just didn't want to push it on you or force it on you. And she said, I didn't know you were going through all this. And I'm sorry, I didn't know. But they were afraid to push and ask too much.
Then they would never hear from you. Right.
So I was going back. I was telling the people at ILO, which is on Hollywood Boulevard, I'm going over to CLO. And the people at CLO thought I was doing something for S&P, and the people at S&P thought I was doing something for ILO. And I was going out, and I got a room, and I had to find a room in LA that was not going to have any Scientology affiliation. So I rented a room with all these super gay guys that were like so gay. There was no chance any of them were in Scientology.
Yeah.
So, and they were lovely. And so they had gotten me a room. Bedding, you know, because I had to walk away without my stuff.
Sure.
I couldn't like load up a car full of stuff and drive away. You're gonna get stopped. Right. I'd already been stopped by Kirsten in the past. Like I couldn't do that. So they got me a car, gave me money to buy bedding. I'm like, they think I'm out working on something, and I was like in IKEA trying to find a bedspread and pillow and towels and, you know, things like that. I slowly would transfer like one clothing item at a time to my car. So I had like a few outfits to wear. I hid my car down the way. So because they would have been like, how do you have this Kia that's only 3 years old? I had to got on the phone with my sister and found this nice lady that worked at IKEA. And I was like, she said, you're like a ghost. You have no credit. You don't have bad credit. Right. You have no credit. Where have you been? I was like, well, I was filming around the world, and I was in all these other countries. And she's like, finance is not going to approve this, but I'm going to go talk to them. Right. So she figured out how to make it work to finance a car for me, which she was like an angel. Right.
Yeah.
So then, I do this. Then now I'm told that I am programmed for conversion therapy. I do session number one. And I was just like, no way. So I went to do this appointment, somehow convinced this guy at ILO level who was afraid of pissing off the
S&P. What's ILO? Level. I don't know what ILO is.
It's the International Liaison Office, which is the building on Hollywood Boulevard, right?
Yeah.
Middle management and Scientology Media Productions is like this level.
Okay.
You know, international liaison, just under.
Okay.
So I convinced this guy and this guy that they're going to piss off this guy if they don't let me go. I go, well, it's part of my thing that I was guaranteed I could go handle my medical stuff. This is part of my handling. And they all know that's supposed to be reported to David Miscavige. I've been handled, you know, whatever. I'm not a problem. And they were inadvertently just letting my gayness come out more and more and more. Whatever handlings they did just utterly backfired. So I was like, you know, I need to go to this appointment by myself, but I will be back, right? Because then they got onto it a little bit, and they actually got onto what was going on and called me back over and were like, where were you? What were you doing? We're going to consider that you blew. They had sent out people to my sister's house and my brother's house in Orange County, which is like an hour away. And they had people parked outside my brother and sister's house looking for me.
Right.
Because they realized I wasn't at the other one. Yeah. After that, I still managed to convince this guy that I needed to go to my medical appointment alone, which I'm sure he took a whole bunch of shit for, because they were now escorting me home and following me everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and they had initiated blow drill, and they just got me back. Like, I got to go to this medical appointment. It's no big deal. Right. He's like, okay. Yeah. So I wake up in the morning, go to my car and leave. And, I was like, that's it. I'm done.
Is that it?
I mean, that's when I left. I didn't come back.
Wow, amazing. Again. And they couldn't find you, right, Rachel?
No, they couldn't find me because my brother was like, tell him you're staying with me. And my sister's like, tell him you're staying with me. And then
amazing.
They hit, my brother and sister hid me. And then we went into COVID quarantine, and then they were so scared, you know. Right. They did track down my cell phone number and, you know, called me and things like that. And now that I'm here, they've sent, there have been people reaching out to me or calling me or showing up unannounced over the past 3 years, as recently as 2 weeks ago, showing up to talk to me and surprising me in a parking lot late at night alone and stuff like that.
But, people that you knew or people that are in the Sea Org?
People that I knew, both. Yeah.
And PIs and stuff harassing you?
Nope. No PIs I have observed yet.
Okay. But it's just, they're just people from the Sea Org that you knew?
People that were are either former Sea Org or currently Sea Org.
And they're just meeting you in parking lots saying you need to come back or?
Yes.
Who are the people that are tracking you down?
There was a guy I knew for years in the Sea organization. We worked filming together, and I'd helped him out a lot. So he's stayed in touch with me a little bit, and he came and surprised me and was like a couple weeks ago at a film festival. I was at a film festival because I had a film I worked on that was playing in the festival. Uh-huh. And he showed up at the film festival, and I'm like, oh, hey, cool, whatever. You know, it's just like nice. Everybody's just keeping it chill, whatever.
Yeah.
He's left. He's not my enemy, right? He's left this SO, right? Okay. And he's whatever.
But he's still a Scientologist.
I didn't know how much or how little. And so he's like, catches me. He ends up at this festival. Well, it's a big festival. He's in the film industry. Could have been a coincidence. But then he comes and corners me by myself when everyone else in the group had left me at my car. And is like, hey, look, I'm really worried about you because I heard you work for Leah Remini. And I was like, I do? Really? Wow. That's news to me. Right. He's like, yeah, and I'm really worried about you, blah, 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 whatever. And I was like, well, you don't have to worry about me. I'm cool. I don't. She hasn't hired me. I'm not shooting for her. We're in a double strike. That it would be great if I was, you know. That's what I told him. I'm like, that would be cool.
Yeah.
But no, you heard wrong, right? And so, and I go, well, like, look, what were you? You were sent by OSA. And he's like, oh, no, I was not sent by OSA.
Of course not.
I'm like, I know you were. Like, I was like, bro, like, don't lie to me. And he's like, well, I just want to talk to you about how things are different and things have changed and how it's totally cool to be gay now. There's even a gay guy I know who's being recruited for the Sea Organization. I go, they'll recruit you, but you got to stop being gay to be in the Sea Organization.
Correct.
And he will never be qualified for
a good point, by the way.
90%.
Yep. Yeah.
Because I said, I was told specifically to my face by an ethics officer, you cannot be in the Sea Organization and be gay. Cannot work for S&P and be gay.
Yes, of course.
But he's trying to gaslight me.
Yeah, of course.
And he believes it because he's like, I'm not anti-gay. I love gay people. The guy even has some queer stuff of his own, right? Some queer behavior that is awesome and beautiful and lovely. And I said,
well, it will be handled in Scientology if they have anything to say about it.
Yeah. But he believes
there are a lot of people living in the Sea Org and in Scientology who are suppressing who they really are, you know, including celebrities, because they know what life will hold for them as Scientologists and in the Sea Org if they admit to that.
Right. But very much so.
And if they are admitting to it, it's like being handled every day, right? Like, okay, just tell us what you did again. Okay, so you had sex with a guy, or you had sex with a girl, or you watched gay porn, or, you know, this, right? And then you will have to pay for interrogations, and you will be put through this kind of this conversion therapy for infinity until you no longer exist, until you finally leave, or until until you're bankrupt. I mean, it's never ending. The handling is never ending. You will always be made to feel that there's something wrong with you that needs to be handled. Yeah.
And it would be a win, which is all like a success, a win. Yeah. If you were to be gay and come home and divorce, if you're a gay guy and you divorce your husband and become straight, that would be a win. They would be like, yes. And I said, bro, if there's nothing wrong with it, this guy genuinely believed what he was saying to me.
Sure.
Like, and I was like, bro, if there's nothing wrong with it, why can't I get married to my wife in a Scientology ceremony in a Scientology church? Correct. Why does your human rights public service announcement, the right to marriage and family, only have straight people? Why was I told we're never going to put a dyke on Scientology TV? Why are we not featuring, where are my gay freedom medal winners, which is a big Scientology humanitarian award? Mm-hmm. Why can you not be gay and be in the C organization if it's totally fine? Why would I put myself in a group that doesn't acknowledge my beautiful family completely as something valid? Why would I do that to myself?
Rachel, you absolutely said it there. Listen, Scientology and Scientologists, again, I'm going to say this. Stop with the bullshit and do what Rachel says. Change your websites. Get some movies on your stupid channel that have stories that involve all people. Include the LGBTQI community. Change your books. Make public statements. Like you're saying, Rachel, show us some marriages. Perform some. You're all ministers, right? I mean, get Alfredi over there, Alfredi Johnson, and get him to start performing marriages of like you're saying, Rachel, perform a marriage. Let's see it. Stop talking about it and let us see the change. Let us see the changes you claim you made.
Yeah, exactly. I know that was very cynical, because the underlying problem is those quotes.
Yes.
You can't change.
That's what you said.
Scientologists can't change that. But
they say that there's nothing that we don't take a stance on it. We love all people, including the LGBTQI community. Prove it.
Yeah, I know. And it's never going to happen.
Right. And Rachel, so when people argue this, journalists and they have celebrity Scientologists on their shows and Entertainment Tonight and all that, and they have these celebrity Scientologists spewing their bullshit, say, can you produce a book? Can you produce on your channel, is any stories of involving everybody, that you embrace everybody? Like,
yeah,
that's exactly all okay. Yeah.
Rachel, I have a question. How did things go with respect to David Miscavige when you were doing this? Like, what were they doing? Did they take you off his lines so that you were no longer allowed to be around him? Did they tell you you can't say anything to him? How did that work?
So I took myself, distanced myself from working around him and in those conditions because of things that had nothing to do with the treatment of gay people. It had to do with the treatment of human beings and human rights. And I did not like what I was seeing. And I was like, I'm going to step away from this and do other stuff and stand back and observe and figure out, like, can this be changed? Like, what is the deal? I was trying to figure out what's wrong here. Right. So I had pulled myself back away from that. I had said, I don't want to go and work on these events anymore. I don't like the environment. I don't think it's okay. I ran into stuff where I missed someone in my family dying. I was told I was not allowed to go because I was working for David Miscavige and I needed to be there. So I missed a death. I had to delay my father's funeral. I missed my father's death as well. And I was ripped out of the hospital and then ripped away to shoot David Miscavige the day after my mother died. I was like, this is not cool. And I see people doing horribly, I see adults being scared to death. Just so much fear. And I see the ups and the downs, and I was like, something's up here, right? So I said, I don't want to go to these events anymore, because that was our main interaction with him. I don't want to be a part of this. I'm not okay with this, but you know, I'll go shoot stuff and I'll work on building equipment. Like, I spent a good part of 2 years figuring out all this super nerdy, like, camera lighting, audio stuff, which was fun because I like to geek out, right? But I was like, I need to figure this out. And I started being put into handlings and stuff like that, right? And I pretty much wanted to leave. So then I pulled myself back, but I wasn't like officially off his lines. Yeah. But if someone says, I don't want to do this, they consider it a sign that you've committed.
You've done something bad. Yes.
Yeah. So they were like, then going to nail down. And then I had seen Black Propaganda. So we had to do all the handlings on me seeing Going Clear. And I had been, actually was able to access Mike's stuff on my BlackBerry, your blog, and some different things, right? So I was like, fuck this. I'm going to read some stuff from y'all. So anyway, and then I had to do all these like handlings on that. And they had really had me convinced, okay, it must be me. I must be shitty, right? So then David Miscavige shows up at S&P and is like, go get Rachel, pulls me into one of the studios, Studio A, and is like, why are you... It was not a closet. It was a whole studio. He's not going in a closet with anybody. It's too tight spaces. So he's like, why are you hiding from me? And he goes, hey, Cirque du Soleil guy, next time I come around, can you hang Rachel from the S&P tower? If you drive down Sunset, there's a tower with a Scientology symbol on it. He said, hang Rachel from that tower so I can see her when I drive up because she's hiding from me. And he's like, why are you hiding from me? I'm like, me? What are you talking about? I'm just doing my thing, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm just over here doing my thing, you know? So I was like, okay. So that was like weird, right? So then I pulled away and then I had a thing where I was told again, you can't go see family. And after all that stuff with the deaths and being kept from family, and I had been saying, look, like, this is a thing for me. I want to be allowed to see my family sometimes. Like, we're talking couple days a year. Yeah. Like, not, I'm not trying to take, you know, 2 months of paid leave. Like, it's just not huge request, right? I want to go see them for an afternoon on a Sunday. And they're saying no. And that got really toxic and they were screaming. That's when I left. Yeah. So I also was like, this isn't going to work because I'm feeling really gay. And I started being like, nobody's going to control what I can see. And I always found ways around the castrated phones, we call them, because of these phones where they put all these things on them where you, and like, I would be like, I'll go get on internet. I was out filming stuff. Even if I was filming in LA, I'm out filming stuff. I'm around open internet all the time. You can put a block on my iPad, but I know how to turn it off. I'm going to go. So I was like filling myself with queer culture. I was listening to Cameron Esposito's podcast and all these gay things. And I'm like, whoa, look at all these queer people. They're actually super cool. And look at this beautiful, supportive community. And podcasts were safe for me to listen to because security will come and take your devices and check them. Yeah. And they didn't know how to check for like what podcast you may have streamed if you cleared your history, right? So I just filled myself with all this gay stuff and then, you know, whatever. And all this information just started saying like, no, I'm going to not be under fascism. I'm going to read stuff and I'm a big girl and I can make up my own mind and I can choose to decide if, you know, Mike is saying something shitty and it's not true or if it is true. Right. But I can decide that right for myself and nobody's going to control me like that. So I pulled myself away and then pulled myself away again. And then on that big handling that came from me leaving to see family for an afternoon, that was this huge explosion. That's when they hit, came in really hard on the lesbian stuff and the, are you a lesbian and what's the deal? And, oh, you'd kiss girls before and, you know, all that stuff like way before, not even in the SO, unfortunately. I was, more well-behaved than I wish I had been, but, but, oh, well, from before and like you, and you like watching these gay movies like Rocket Man and Carol and, you know, phenomenal pieces of cinema. Like, so, that's when the handling came in really strong. So then I don't know what was told to him about me being gay or not, but they did need to report back to me. I was also sent as part of that to the ship to do officer training school on the Free Winds ship.
Oh yeah.
So I did officer training and was like, you know, running the winch and like doing all this being a deckhand for a while and doing all this stuff and climbing over the side of the ship, which that was part of my handling that apparently was approved by David Miscavige. Like, maybe that would make me not want to run off and see family.
Right.
Maybe that would make me not gay. I don't know when or if they told him about the gayness, because they probably were like, this could be a flap for us. How'd we let this gayness?
Yeah.
We let all these rainbows slide in under all of our clearances and security checking. This is a flap. We let this gayness in his environment, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was painstaking work to find a makeup artist and a hair stylist for him, for his events, that were not gay. Were fantastic, but were not gay, because they were never going to.
Specification?
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. The person who was looking for them and finding the professionals that they hired at $10,000 a day, by the way.
Wow.
And you can't feed the crew Subway sandwiches. This is a big flap, right? You can't, it's just stuff like that. There was a lot of things. It's not just the gayness. It's a lot of it was more how other people were being treated.
So, Rachel, you were saying that I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the David Miscavige of it all. So he requires that no one be gay that works at Gold and that films him or works for him. Like you were talking about the hair and makeup people, they too have to go through. How do they test for that? I mean, I don't even think that's legal, Mike, is it?
There's like there's like a blood test you can do. No, I'm kidding.
No, but you know what I mean? It's like a little, how is that handed down as far as a requirement?
So I remember there were a couple of people from SNP. One of them was putting budgeting stuff together, this girl, and she was like, oh, well, we might need a replacement, you know, makeup artist. And so, you know, we've got to find a great makeup artist that isn't gay, because we can't have a gay guy. And there's like a lot of gays in doing hair and makeup.
And so how were you guys checking that?
I mean, I don't know how, because I wasn't in charge of hiring outside professionals. Right. So I don't know how they checked, because maybe they asked. Maybe they trolled their social media.
Looked on their Facebook, looked on their Twitter, looked to see if they were connected to anybody, if they've got a husband or a girlfriend or whatever. As soon as they found someone that had a girlfriend, they probably went, this is it.
Right.
Yeah, a girlfriend or a wife. I mean, yeah, they probably tried to use their gaydar at first, but that's a little risky, because I'm telling you, their gaydar is terrible. Like, I was like, it's not like left that environment and people were all like, oh, you're gay? What? Like, it's a little, it's actually obvious to people, at least from the community, right? So they were like, what, with me? But I'm like, really? Duh. So their gaydar is not very accurate. But I'm sure they use that first. And then, you know, you can ask without asking, because you can be like, oh, yeah, do you have a wife? You know,
right.
things like that.
Right.
And if the person's like assuming that it's going to be okay, because of course it should be okay, and be like, oh, no, like, my name's Joe and my husband is John, you know, like whatever.
Right.
They'd be like, oh, thank you so much. We'll get back to you.
Right.
Don't call us. We'll call you.
Right. So Dave Miscavige hired $10,000 a day makeup artist and hairstylist for his appearances at Scientology events.
Yes. And, you know, rehearsal days, grand openings, any professional photography going on.
Who were his makeup artists and hairstylists? Do you know?
Bruce and Luke.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're on social media. Like, I think Bruce does makeup for Beyonce occasionally. Like, these are top notch people. And there was this whole disaster a number of years ago with a Golden Era production staff member who was sent to the RPF because David, the RPF being the Rehabilitation Project Fortress, which is the like prison labor camp that happens if you
mess up.
Yeah. And I put mess up in quotes because it can be quite a loose definition of mess up. But what I was told is that this lady was a professional makeup artist and joined the C organization and did his makeup. And then he sweat on stage at an event. So she was, because that happened and he sweat, she was sent to the RPF.
Wow.
So then they started hiring professionals. So it goes through these waves of like, you know, oh no, we need to be doing this with our internal staff members and y'all just need to stop sucking and being so shitty and learn how to be pros and do it yourselves. And then it goes through waves of like, I must have hired professionals and that are outsiders that are not a part of the church. And like, they're the only ones good enough. And you see, and then you see how much money I have to spend on these guys, 'cause you guys are too pathetic to actually do this job.
Right.
Like a real professional. So it goes through these like waves, and then they're like, we're not using any pros. We're going to train, you know,
C-Org members to,
we're going to train Jane, and Jane is going to be it. And then something happens and they're like, Jane is amazing. Wow. You're so great. You're the best. Wow. Can you guys see how great she is? And then, oh, Jane just, you know, they'd say like, F'd the dog. Like, you know, like they'd say, oh, she blew it. And she, you know, all these like gnarly sayings. And then she's like persona non grata. And then she's supposed to grovel her way back up. And it's this build you up, blow smoke up your ass, love bomb you. And then if you're too good and you're doing too well, that's a problem, because you can start to feel confident and you can start to feel like you have some sort of control. So then they have to find something that you're doing wrong to make you crash down. And I think that was really, I think I gave them a tough challenge, because they brought a lot of people in to run SMP who are from the Flagland base, which is their giant mecca complex of like over 30 buildings that they own in Clearwater, Florida. So they imported these like executives and ethics people, right? And they were going to run us and they were going to whip us into shape. And here they're trying to work with, you know, me and a few other people who've been doing our job professionally for so many years. I think some of them were kind of young. I've probably been doing my job like for 2/3 of their life, right? So, and they're trying to like, you did this, that's all effed up, because they needed to find a way to make us crash, to smash us, so we didn't get too confident and we didn't start feeling too good about ourselves. Because you have to feel like, I'm a piece of shit and I need you to make me feel better. So they were trying to find stuff wrong with what I was doing, but they didn't know what they were talking about technically. So sometimes someone would be like, oh, the lighting was messed up on that. And I was like, well, what about it was messed up?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. But this one guy, Henning from Gold, said in a letter, in a letter that he wrote, that the lighting was messed up. And I'm like, well, what exactly was messed up? Well, you tell us what was messed up, because it was messed up.
Right.
I'm like, well, can he send a reference from one of these? There's like this giant lighting book, which I read like 3 times, and I have really good reading comprehension. So I knew all this stuff from it. So I'm like, this was in. Here's our light meter readings from the settings we had. And here's the test he approved. And here's like our light meter readings that show that we did exactly the same thing. So please tell me what was wrong. And then they're like, well, something. And I'm like, well, this doesn't work. Right. Like, but they were trying to smash me down.
Of course.
And this is a precedent, and this is the way it works when you, it trickles down from the top. It absolutely trickles down from leadership. So this is what it's like to work for the chairman of the board, Sue B. David Miscavige. This is what it's like to work for him. He's like, you're awesome and you're great. And let me, you know, like say in front of others how great you are and like love bomb you. And you're like, whoa, I feel so, I didn't, me, you know, like that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then, push you to try to get you to get you to screw up or whatever. And it's this roller coaster ride, up and down game, which I observe with so many individuals. And I saw, you know, grown adults, grown, big, strong, you know, men in total crippling fear, looking gaunt, shaking, going into anxiety attacks, sweating, so scared to go into a meeting with him, right. Having a total freak out. And I was like, I looked at that happening with others, others being crushed, others being, or myself not being allowed to attend things like very important family events, funerals, family member that's dying in the hospital, you know, things like that. Sometimes you get to go, sometimes you don't. It kind of depends. A lot of times you're going to say no. So I looked at people, you know, it's like, let fight fire with fire, right? So they say that the suppressive person is always surrounded by cowed and ill associates. And one day I was looking around at S&P and looking at the event crew and the people that were on his lines from Golden Era Productions and from Scientology Media Productions. And I'm like, they are cowed. They are ill.
Yeah,
they are fearful. I mean, for God's sake, Mike is going through all kinds of unbelievable medical shit right now, which I'm sure is really hard physically. And Mike, you look a million times healthier and better right now than you did when I last saw you in this, when you were in the Sea Org, when I saw you at Celebrity Center and you were there dealing with Panorama and that show on the BBC.
Yep. I agree. I couldn't agree with you more, Rachel. It's like, it is true. And I wrote a whole blog post about that, taking the L. Ron Hubbard writing about what that sort of personality does and comparing it to David Miscavige. And it's pretty interesting how, you know, Hubbard didn't get everything wrong. And that's stolen from a lot of other writings about sociopathic personalities and, you know, how they impact the people around them. But mm-hmm. David Miscavige is certainly that. I mean, some of the stuff about him, his vanity and the really bizarre things are amusing, but most of it is very, very disturbing. Like the world of David Miscavige is a world of that you can compare to people. It's so funny. Leah often says, you know, we never thought that we were SPs because SPs were like Hitler or Dillinger or whatever, that are the names that Hubbard lists in the policy letter about what a suppressive person is. Okay, David Miscavige is that. He is like a Stalin or a Kim Jong-un or, you know, I'm not saying Hitler, but like that sort of a personality who is toxic to everyone around him and keeps people off balance. I mean, that's a very, I mean, there's a bunch of books written about how Stalin managed to stay in power. And that was one of the things that he was a master of, keeping people off balance, not knowing whether they were in the good books or the bad books day to day. So they're always in fear and always it could be today that I'm championed up as the example for everybody and everybody then starts kissing my butt. Or today could be the day that I am sent to go reside in the swamp with Mark Yeager and build a hut out of bamboo to live in. So it just goes around like that. But
yeah, and I wanted to ask Rachel what because you had mentioned that you were starting to witness the abuses. What did you witness? Because we know we've heard from many former people, you know, including Mike, obviously, right? but what did you start to witness that you were like, this is not okay. This is not what I signed up for.
And, you know, because, in the first many, many, many years, I was not at Scientology Media Productions and I worked for Golden Productions, but I wasn't physically present there. So I did not see the whole.
Well, of course not, because most people didn't, right? That's
right. Part of most the problem. People didn't. And I saw, I did interact with David Miscavige, and I saw maybe a little bit of fear and things like that with people. But when we started to make the transition to Scientology Media Productions, that's when I really started to see things. Okay. Yeah. It's gotten more complicated, and the abuse still occurs, but it doesn't occur outwardly as freely as it did at one point. Right. So he will transfer his the abusive behavior to others to do it for him.
Right.
That is what I have observed has changed.
Once somebody leaves, escapes, right, then extra precaution is taken to ensure that nobody else is talking, right? Like, we don't know what's happening with Heber Jentz. We don't know what's happening with Mark Imber. We don't know what's happening with Guillaume Lazure or Shelley Miscavige, who hasn't been seen now in almost 20 years, right? So it's like, we don't know because we don't have access. We don't have any access at this point where, you know, people were able to escape and give out information to the authorities, to the FBI, to the press, to us. And they're speaking on their own. Right. But how many people have escaped since?
Yeah. Right? And many people will not speak out and will never speak out, you know, for various reasons. But he is operating more out of Scientology Media Productions and Flag and Author Services than Gold. And Scientology Media Productions is an int-level organization with more difficult clearances than Gold. So it's up there, right? So I don't want to, I just also want it to be clear that I think that abuse isn't just physical abuse, right?
Of course.
And can go and say, oh, someone yelled at you. So what? It's not that. It's like, you could be like, oh, you got sent to ethics. What are you complaining about? Whatever. You have to understand that if someone sends you to ethics, you get in trouble because somebody didn't like the hair light on David Miscavige. That was one example. They said, but there's too much light on his hair or not enough light on his hair.
His hair is a big deal.
It's a big deal. Oh, my God, is it a big deal?
Why,
right?
Why, Mike?
Well, partly because his dad was basically went bald.
Right.
His older brother has gone bald.
Okay.
So Dave is terrified that he is going to end up being bald.
Okay.
Well, and so, it's just general vanity as well.
Yeah, it is general. No,
but you're laughing, Mike, like you know. So obviously, like the hair has been talked about.
Oh, the hair is endlessly talked about.
Endless. Like,
I mean, his old hairdresser, LaVon.
Yeah.
Yes, I remember spend LaVon.
An hour preparing his hair to go on stage, and it had to be like cut like tiny 16th of an inch bits of hair trimmed and then poofed up so that it looked big. And I assume that
intentional.
Absolutely.
I've always had a problem with his hair.
It's so funny that he goes out of his way because I've always had a problem with his hair. And I remember like thinking, remember when I was like meeting with him at the end, Mike, I was giving him all these ideas. Like I was like, you know, Scientology has to change. Like we, you know, the prices, people going broke, like we really should be out there in the communities. We shouldn't be all about ourselves. And I was thinking like, you know, I'm probably going to have like an offer to be like on his staff, like an honorary, because like I'm solving Scientology's problem, right? Like, I'm just going to say it, you know, I'm going to say like, there's no more member, like none of that, no more donating like to the IA. We need to be out there in the communities. Like I was like, you know, it's celebrity center. It's like, you know, this renaissance. The whole hotel sucks. And I just was going up through my list of things, you know, at all of the AOs, like everything needs to be redone. You need to stop using Sea Org members. Like they don't know what they're doing. You need real architects, real builders, like, you know. And I was thinking, and I'm going to one day talk to him about his hair because it's so awful. It's so, it's like a bouffant. It's like, it's so,
well,
like John Travolta, 1970s, Saturday Night Fever. I was like, we got to get out of this. Like, we got to like get into, that's so funny that you're saying this is purposeful. Well,
there's
because it looks like he has all this hair. I mean, he does have hair. I mean, he does have a good head of hair.
He does have hair. Yeah. But I think by this point, there's probably implants. But if you see him in the morning when he gets out of bed, his hair is flat, just like it's flat like mine. It's not like there's no lift to it. The lift is all artificial.
Right.
Oh yeah, it's done. It's done that way. And for events or any public appearance where there's going to be photos done, that's an even bigger deal. So we were tasked.
It makes him look taller.
It does add some weight. That's true. It's more than that. Like, we were doing, I mean, the amount of money we spent on printing actual 8x10 test photos of the lighting on his hair is astronomical. I'm sure we spent thousands of dollars printing test photos and submitting them for approval of the right look of the hair, the color of the light on the hair. I could quote you what the LRH recommended books on lighting say about hair lights, because this was this whole big project, right? So I submitted all these tests on his hair, on the light that hits the back of the head only, specifically, right?
So
with
funny.
All these prints, the color temperature that was, I was reading that
in Hollywood that you could say this about, she would never work again.
No, I was reading the color temperature of the hair light with different degrees of gels on it and giving a reading with a $2,000 color meter. And then I was reading the testing different modifiers to change the quality of the light hitting the back of the head. And then I was testing additionally the strength of that backlight and the strength and because this was stills photography for a short period of time, I had to take over doing stills photography for someone who was very, very ill. So we were testing this in with the still strobes. And so I had to measure also the shutter speed and the amount of ambient light that was entering versus the amount of strobe light that was reading. So all these permutations, we submitted all this stuff. I got a photo back delivered to me via my direct senior who ran the Scientology Media Productions organization. This is the settings. This is how you shoot. This is how his hair light has to be set at every event without question, every single time. Got it in writing. This is approved, right? Okay. So I said, okay. I was like, wow, it feels like a little too much hair light. It's a little 90s. Yeah. But if that's what you want, I'm here to make you look how you want to look. That's my job. Whatever you want, right? So we go through, this was at the Flagland base in Ruth Eckert Hall. So we go through all these events like that. Then we're doing the Golden Age of Tech 2 release. So they released all the training courses for training to be an auditor, their version of a counselor or whatever. They were being re-released. So it's this big deal. We go through all these huge events. They put this giant tent up. We're flying around in a helicopter, shooting it from the air, like all this stuff, right? So we go through all of them, dozens of shoots with him, speaking to the general people and the staff, the prisoners and the staff in the little auditorium there where he's doing events right now. And then in this big thing, right? Everything's good. Everything's good. Everything's good. Everything's good. And then we get to near the last event. And I have a family member, my stepdad called me and said, hey, I have cancer. It's back. If you want to see me, you have to come now. Like this is it. Right. So I went in and I had not, this whole evolution was like 9 months of not sleeping ever because he made so many changes to the things inside that flag building, that the Mecca building, that giant building in Clearwater that they custom built. It was changed over and over and over again. Like, oh, that wall paint color should be eggshell white, not deep ivory. Repaint this whole floor. Oh, this is wrong. That like little things, and we'd have to reshoot it and reshoot it and reshoot it and reshoot it. So I didn't sleep hardly at all. I was in horrible. And anyone else with me, we were not sleeping. It was complete sleep deprivation. And then I went to the ethics people and I said, like, hey, I need to go to Ohio. And my stepfather was actually a Scientologist. the irony of it. And I said, I need to go to Ohio. Like, he's not okay. And they were like, well, you can't. You need to be here. Do you want to be here for COB or not?
Right.
Do you want to be his photographer and his lead, you know, lead chief cameraman or not? You know, because this is the biggest thing that's ever happened that we've ever had happen in our history. And, you know, yada, 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 yada. And I was like, well, I do, but I need to go. So maybe like night after I can go. Well, no, because we're going to go to Taiwan and open the organization, whatever. So we go, we shoot three events and, or a multitude of events and balls and blah, 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 all this stuff. And then then they're like, no, you can't go. You need to go. He ends up not liking something about, he went on stage to open the flag building. He goes, look, this is not a big deal. We've already done the main events. I'm just going to walk out for like 30 seconds, say, you know, 30 seconds of stuff. And then we pull the ribbon and that's it. You know, everything's been great. Totally happy with the hair light, the lighting, like everything. Right. So we go, I go out there to shoot it and a bunch of stuff changed. I had over 30 cameras that I was responsible for running all the different camera stuff, being like a cinematographer and over a stills factory or whatever. So, and I was just like worried, you know. I would sneak away to go to the bathroom to call my stepdad to try to talk to him. And I was saying, I'm trying to make it there. Right. Because I didn't even have permission to go make a phone call. Luckily I was lucky that I had a BlackBerry and I could actually call outside lines. Cause a lot of the people at work at Flag can't even call right. their family. Right. So, I was not with it. And then there was like we took a bunch of photos and then the one photo of him, there was an underexposure on it. And so he goes, okay, committee of evidence, it's trash. I hate it. And by the way, I wanted different lighting. And I'm like, you wanted different lighting? Great. Well, and I was like, hey, look, so I can figure out how to do any kind of lighting you want. I'm not a stills photographer. Mind you, I have no professional training or background in stills photography. And it is not the same as motion picture cinematography. They are two similar, but totally different technologies and different fields. Right. So I'm trying my level best to wrap my head around this. And I just wanted to die at that point. It was so awful. I just was like, I just want to leave. I just want to go see this person who I'm very close with, who's laying there in a hospital dying.
Right.
And has begged me to come and see him. He goes, well, I just actually don't like the lighting in general overall. And I go, well, I'm doing exactly what has been done by the photographers before me. And they have these formulas that say, don't change anything in these conditions formulas. Right. So nobody's going to go in and change.
Well, you were already
working and getting approved.
Well, we were okay. So where we are is that you were told you were given a photo approval, right?
Yes.
And now all of a sudden it's just changed. Right.
Yeah. And it's just trash.
He doesn't like it. And I think that's what Mike was laughing at. Right.
Like, it happens all the time.
Right. Like he says, okay to a building, the building's not okay. Knock it down, rebuild it. We have the money. Right. We have tax exempt money, you know?
Yeah. Everything gets approved until it's not.
Right.
And suddenly, no one tells you.
And then suddenly the no, it's not is not, it's not him who said, this is how it's supposed to be done. Now it's you who fucked it up somehow.
Right. Because like, you should have known.
You should have known that wasn't right, even though I said that was what you're supposed to do.
Even though
says this is what you're supposed to do, you're not allowed to say, well, no, this isn't right. Right. Like there's tons of stories from these events of the pros that they brought in, the professionals, like sound mixers.
Yeah.
Like who would come in and he would just rail on them. Yeah, there's not enough bass in my voice. I'm sounding sibilant. I'm sounding this. I'm sounding that.
Voice adjust of God. This, voice of that. God. I need to be the voice of God. That's what they say.
Is that what he would say?
Literally.
Yes. Okay.
Wow. And then in the end, before they got so disgusted that they refused to work anymore, they would start fiddling with knobs and just fiddle.
Right.
And say, yes, we did that. And nothing, they would change Nothing.
And he would say, and great. Then he would
say, that's great.
That's so much better.
That's perfect. That's so much better. And what these were the guys that were brought in and paid huge amount of money that were like soup, like the guy who used to be the mixer for Rolling Stones, The Who, like Mick. All of these huge and like President Obama and all of these guys would be brought in because the SEOG members were no good at it.
Right.
They'd come in, they'd start, and then after a while, they'd just go, this is hopeless. I can't do anything here. You're paying me money to do nothing. So
this person's a madman.
Right. And they would literally just sit and fiddle with buttons and like say, yep, I did it. And then it'd say, oh, that's so much better. And they didn't change a thing.
Right. And he was
to the point where I went. So then he's like, you need a committee of evidence. When I got weeks later after whatever, I'm in there with this guy who knows photography. He's like a hobby photographer. And he's like, I don't understand what's wrong. What did you do wrong? Because didn't you shoot raw? Yes. And he's like, well, I looked it up so I could really understand. You can adjust exposure by several stops without any quality loss. So from my calculations, you're shots should have been completely fine. And I'm in there and I'm like, yeah, but this is COB who said to do this. So I'm like, yes, but I obviously have to like do something to be responsible for this because here we are right now. Right. So like, he's like, I don't see why technically it doesn't make sense that what's wrong is what's wrong. And I'm I don't know. Sorry. It's just, you have to, I was like, bro, you know, you have to make me be in trouble and say I'm all guilty, right? So just do it and don't think, you know, it all makes sense as long as you don't think about it, right? So then all this shit's happening and I'm like, look, I get you wanted things changed. I said, I will provide any type of lighting anybody wants in the world. If I don't know how to do it, I will figure out how to do it. I'm smart. I'll do tests. I'll figure it out. But you got to tell me that you want it. I can't read mine. And well, they're kind of like, why
it doesn't actually matter, right? I mean, this doesn't actually matter because
it's a game. It's a game.
Exactly.
It's a control game.
Yeah, exactly. So it has like what he says he wants, he doesn't want. What he wants, he does. He wants, and then he doesn't want it. This is when we're talking about abuse. We're talking about an insane person, right?
Yep.
Who is abusing anyone and everyone around his organization. And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about mental and physical abuse. He's a tyrannical. He's narcissistic. He's a psychopath. He's a narcissist. I mean, he's all these words, right? There's no point in trying to rationalize
you can't.
Your light meter. You know, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. That's the point. So then I was like, okay, well, you didn't like this stuff, whatever. Yeah. They're like, oh, well, definitely you can't go see your stepdad who's dying.
Right.
Because this was not this photo out of, I had probably 3,000 photos that I'd just gotten rave reviews on and approved over the past few months. Still photos, not knowing really much about sales photography matter. So then they're like, you can't go, you need to go to Taiwan because we're going to open the ideal church in Taiwan. So I get told, no, you can't go. I get thrown on a plane to Taiwan. And then that, I'm like, okay, well, we can try this. We can try that. He's like, what are you, crazy? He's all like, just now he's just being a total dick when he's been really nice in the past, right? Mm-hmm. So my time was up. I was getting too confident and too whatever. My time was up to be shit on, and they had to like search for this stupid stuff to be all upset about, right? And to control me so I couldn't go see my family member.
You never got to go see your stepfather?
No, I went there. They found out that he died while I was there, but didn't tell me. I spoke to him in the airport on my layover on the way, and they didn't tell me so I wouldn't be bothered during the event and I could focus.
Wow.
And I was there doing this stupid events are, you know, it's just like so dumb. In another country with no sleep, now on a completely opposite time zone, told me when I got back that he had died. Wow. So I went on this whole long flight, not knowing what was going on, worrying about him. I called and couldn't reach him because he was dead.
Wow.
So they tell me when I get back and they go, you better get through lower conditions for this or you can't go to the funeral.
Oh, my God.
So they wanted to punish you for what? I don't, for the lighting? For the
he had
hair
an
lighting?
Inconsistent hair light.
Okay.
And that hadn't actually been figured out. And
well, listen, if this isn't one story, right, that kind of
encapsulates the world of David Miscavige.
Of David Miscavige, that once again, you know, somebody's life, right, and what mattered, it doesn't matter because David Miscavige's hair was more important than Rachel getting to her stepdad before he died. And this just kind of shows you a very small, right? Because we could do 5 hours and just Dave Miscavige. But I think that's quite enough.
Yeah. I have a similar story with my mother dying. I have a similar story with my father dying and having to push the funeral back.
All because Dave Miscavige needed you to light his hair. Yeah.
Well, with my mom, we weren't onto the hair at that point. That was just
facetious, Rachel. But basically, nothing is more important than David Miscavige,
right?
And I think that I don't want to keep you any longer than we already have taken so much of your time. But Rachel, I hope you sit down and write a book on David Miscavige's hairline and how to light it. And, you know, I'm very sorry for all that you've been through, Rachel. It's hard to just fathom all of it, all the levels of pain that you've dealt with, and that you're standing and that you're speaking, that you had the courage to leave. Thanks to your brother. Thanks to your sister. Thanks to the person inside of you that they couldn't kill and destroy, made you who you are, like an amazing human being. And thank you for speaking out, Rachel. You didn't have to. And I'm glad that we have you in the free world, to create your art, to send your message out, to get the word out to people that what's important isn't Scientology. And it certainly isn't Dave Miscavige's hairline. So thank you for your time, and thank you for what I know you will continue to do, and you will do amazing work. So thank you.
Thank you.
Everything Leah said goes for me too.
Love you, Mikey.
Love you, Lily. Bye, Rachel.
Bye. Sorry.
Bye, everyone. Thank you for tuning in. You can find more episodes of Exposing Scientology both on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to check out my best-selling memoir, A Billion Years, My Escape from a Life in the Highest Ranks of Scientology. It's available on Amazon and as an audiobook. Until next time, be well and happy.